Welcome to The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. Here's your host, Jeff Nadeau.
What's up, everybody, and welcome in to another edition of The Sit Down, a mafia history podcast. I am your host, Jeff Nadeau. We are here live. Christmas week, it is here. We were going to do an episode this week, but I figured we might as well not do an episode next week because of the holiday and then New Year's Eve and New Year's Day. So next week, we will 100% be off. But this week, we got a great episode. It's going to be a little potpourri, if you will, of holiday cheer. We're going to do a Q&A. I'm going to talk about some mob books. I get the question all the time, what mob books do you like? What mob books are you into? Which are the best? So we're going to go through that a little bit, maybe get Black Jack Fletcher's thoughts on that. And we're also going to talk about a biography today. We're not going to go, you know, incredibly deep because, again, there's not a ton of info, but we're going to talk about Frank Cali. Now, a lot of people that are mob people, mob historians, they like the mob genre. They know who Frank Cali is. A lot of people don't, though. And a lot of people didn't know who he was when he was killed in 2019. A lot of people believed Frank Cali was killed. It was a mob hit and that the wars of the 80s were back and there was going to be a mob war. There are two things you need to know about Frank Cali as we get into this episode. A, he was incredibly powerful. And he was probably one of the most influential people in the state of New York when it comes to the mob in the 2010s and 2000s. And B, he was killed by someone that had no connection to the mob whatsoever. We'll get into the bizarre hit as well. So stick around. Should be a great episode. Let's bring our co-host, Blackjack Fletcher. Merry Christmas. How are you, buddy?
What's going on, brother? It's good to be back. You know, holiday week. I mean, this is exciting time of year. So yeah, we'll do this episode this week, take the week off between Christmas and New Year's and have us a little break. So looking forward to banging this one out and, you know, getting on with our holidays.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you made a comment to me about how, you know, this week is always the, you know, next week for that measure as well, is if you have like a regular job, like I guess outside of like work at like, you know, factories and stuff like that, like, or construction or whatever. Like if you're in like an office, do you do anything this week or
no,
week?
You do absolutely nothing. This is from Thanksgiving to New Year's. It just gets gradually slower and slower and slower. And now these final 2 weeks are just utterly useless. Nobody wants to work.
Right. No, they really are. And, you know, I do want to say this. I know all the time I talk about on this show, I thank, you know, the listeners and I thank everybody, but we started this show in April and I never knew exactly what it would be. It was really just a passion project. You know, I've always enjoyed mob history and the mafia and I thought it was a great idea. I went to Blackjack. We kind of agreed. And, you know, when we did that first episode on Chin Gigante, you know, we're almost 40 episodes into the show at this point. And, you know, we have ads, we get paid. We have, you know, listeners, we have a huge base. I mean, and I told Blackjack right before we recorded, I got an absolutely unbelievable text. And look, these are numbers. I mean, you can't argue with numbers. I mean, stats never lie. And I got a text that this month, and keep in mind, we're 20 days into the month, so I have 10 left. We're at almost 100,000 listens this month, which, you know, I'm not going to say that we're the biggest podcast on earth, but we continue to grind and do great things with this show. People enjoy it. People are coming in. I'm noticing, Blackjack, the cool thing is people are starting with episode one and I've noticed that the listens just go up and up. So I really just want, as we head into Christmas, thank the listeners for coming back and supporting us every week. We try to put in time to this show. We try to tell you something you didn't know. I know a lot of the people we talk about, you might know something about or whatever, but we truly try to tell you something you don't know and try to tell you a good story. And 98% of the comments are great. We have a lot of cool people in the camp here. So we thank you for listening to the show. Well, actually, it's been quite a good experience, hasn't it?
It's been great, man. I mean, it's been absolutely great. You know, the reception that the show has gotten has been incredible. You know, the feedback that we've gotten from people has been great. You know, it's been a really fun experience. So, you know, I'm looking forward to kicking off our second year of the show in just a couple of weeks.
Yeah, 100%. We got some huge people to do. We're going to do Trafficante, Carlos Marcello, the Westies, because so many different names to still do. And we'll hopefully have a great 2022 here on the show. Okay, let's get into the reason we're here. We'll talk about Frank Cali in just a little bit. But first, I wanted to get to your Q&A. We always have fascinating questions with the Q&A. Sometimes we get like the retread questions or whatever. But all in all, we always get good questions. So let's talk about this. And as I've said before, and I always have one or two people that say, I just want the biography. Keep in mind, in the description of our show, I always put where the biography starts. So if you ever want to fast forward or skip to something, you're welcome to it. And that's why I do that. All right, Jersey Girl, great listener. She's always someone that checks at the show each week. Part one, who planned the hit that killed Frankie DiCicco? Also, who is the bomb intended for? Well, look, on last week's show, I was someone that believed that. Now, again, I think it's a wild thought, but it wouldn't surprise me if someone connected to Gotti was involved. Now, obviously, the whole world will tell you that Anthony Queso was the individual that had that idea and instructed an associate to carry out that hit. It was meant for Gotti. But as we talked about with Frankie DiCicco, DiCicco was not happy with Gotti's leadership. And that's something we kind of went over. But Anthony Queso was the one that did that. He obviously had a beef with Frankie DiCicco over the hit on his life. So, yeah, it was definitely meant for Gotti. All that had to do with the fact that Chin Gigante and Corallo hated Gotti due to the Castellano hit. And they were kind of against Gotti the whole time, Corallo and Gigante, and Queso for that matter as well. But Blackjack, we talked about that last week. Obviously, we'll never know. But DiCicco had some pretty unflattering things to say about Gotti. And it seemed as if him and Gravano kind of realized that once Gotti took over, he was kind of a ticking time bomb, if you will, not to be literal, but Gotti was kind of a complete mess when it comes to just keeping his mouth shut. And, you know, they weren't like that.
No, I mean, listen, I think it's fair to say that Frankie DiCicco was skeptical of John Gotti coming into his reign as boss. And I don't know that John did a lot to really, you know, calm those fears or concerns once he was in the big seat. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's the way you described DiCicco. First, the bomb, as you mentioned, certainly was meant for Gotti. It was definitely gas pipe Queso, but I just don't think that, you know, you can, it's not cut and dry, right? Like, I think that Frankie DiCicco had problems with John Gotti in the way he did things, but I also think you probably prefer him to Paul Castellano.
Right. And look, the truth of the matter is a lot of people, well, Gotti obviously had his triumvirate. I mean, he had a lot of people in the family that were connected to him. Obviously people like, you know, some of the, you know, his family and the people in his crew and people like Jackie D'Amico, but there were also the older group, i.e. Jimmy Fiala, you know, even people like DiCicco and who were getting line people, and they were people that wanted to make money, not headlines. But yeah, I mean, Anthony Queso definitely planned to hit on Frankie DiCicco. Stephen Kelly, how pathetic was the Franzese Sammy the Bull conversation on Mafia States of America? Sammy is the most delusional rat fuck of all time. Well, you said that, not me. His listeners come and sometimes kill us in the comments because there are Sammy stands. But what did I think of it? I didn't watch it. Look, I have nothing more to learn from those two. Nope. They're played out. I know everything about Michael. Michael never says anything different. Michael never talks about anything that's brand new or anything. And Sammy, you know, some of his stories are interesting, but I think he has a real issue with the truth. So I don't really care or have much interest in listening to them. It's really just those two just beefing back and forth. You know, it's an interesting question. I guess I'll ask you, Blackjack, who's more likable? I'm definitely Franzese, right?
Oh, God, it's not even close. It's Franzese.
Yeah.
But Sammy Gravano's a scumbag.
Yeah, 100%. I didn't watch it. And look, then I found out that Patrick McDavid is charging for it. Now, look, I understand, like, charging for content, but, like, you can't sell some fucking advertisers on it. You need to charge people to watch it.
Well, that's, you know, that would require actual work, Jeff, to go and sell advertisers.
True.
So.
True. And, you know, not that BetDavid, you know, I mean, BetDavid knows how to make money, but just a simple cash grab is just kind of whack, especially when you were teasing it for months. You're going to make tons of money on the YouTube and all that kind of shit anyway. Kyle, the history guy, which two mobsters remind you most of each other and why? Two, other than Lucky, who do you think had the most influence on creating the five families? No one had more influence than Lucky on creating the five families. It's that simple. Lucky was instrumental in creating the American Mafia for what it is. Who else had influence? That's a good question. Probably Frank Costello. I mean, Frank Costello was, you know, him and Vito Genovese and Lucky were very integral in kind of all creating it together. Obviously, if you ask, you know, Meyer Lansky, I mean, he was very involved. Uh-huh. But Lucky Luciano was the person with the most influence. He's the person that, you know, is why we have the modern American mob. He was a complete influencer, and he was a complete kind of trendsetter, if you will. That's an interesting question. I never thought about it. Maybe Tony Accardo out in Chicago for kind of taking the you know, not a five family, a different group, and kind of taking them into a different direction. We've talked before about how, you know, the outfit during Capone was pretty much a street gang. Yeah. You know, Tony Accardo and Paul Rica took it from, you know, the street gang to like a legitimate organization. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see Accardo when you're talking about Chicago and in New York. I mean, honestly, Jeff, I can't get past, you know, Luciano, as you said, is the architect of this whole thing. If you want to reach, you say Meyer Lansky had something to do with it too, but to go any further than that, it's really just, you know, nonsense.
Yeah, I think because that, I mean, they shaped the American mob really for the complete and everything for what it was. I mean, they took them, you know, they took the families into like a five family situation. They also, I mean, Meyer Lansky literally introduced gambling from a huge high level to the masses after Prohibition. So, I mean, that kind of took them into the you know, the next, you know, because Prohibition was the 10-year, you know, run of making money. And then it went into gambling and all this different stuff. So, yeah, they're obviously huge for the future of the mob. As far as what two mobsters remind me of each other, it's an interesting question.
Yeah, it's a weird question.
I don't know. I guess not in the way they look, but like their personality, I would say, you know, Capone and Gotti were very similar.
Yeah, see, it's funny. I kind of went similar. I went with Tony Accardo and with Carlo Gambino.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Very similar. I mean, they're kind of the extreme opposites, right? You know, so Gotti and Capone were the loudmouth. They dressed all the time, like being in front of the camera. And they're kind of the polar opposite. Accardo was never on camera, never on tape. Same with Carlo. You know, they were only on camera by name only. You know, interestingly enough, I would relate two people in the same family to each other. Carmen Persico and Joe Gallo, they were pretty much the same person, and they were both fucking snakes, and they pretty much beefed each other with each other. But yeah, it's an interesting question. I never thought of it like that, but there are definitely a lot of similarities. And then you have just like, you know, your earners and your quiet guys that are all kind of the same. And then you have your loudmouths. You know, Carmine Galante, you'd probably partner him with another hothead, whoever it was. I'm trying to think of a hothead that completely did what they wanted. I'm trying to think. We just did a show on him, I feel like. Let me look. It's Carmine Galante, and we did a show recently on him. Mad Sam DeStefano, a complete psychopath. Both,
there you go.
Both psychopaths that literally did whatever the fuck they wanted and didn't give a shit what anyone thought about them. So, yeah, that's an interesting question, honestly. I never kind of thought about similarities between two. All right. We want January. If you could be a fly on the wall in any gangster's house, who would it be? Well, you know, I was talking about this the other day, Blackjack, with a contemporary of ours, and we were talking about how, you know, for as crazy as someone like Carmine Persico was or some of these guys, like, have you ever heard Carmine Persico speak?
I never have.
And it's like, there are certain guys like that you see of them. And, you know, for as much as Gotti talked, right? Like, I could maybe name two or three times where like the cameraman picked it up and like played it. Like, you never really heard much from Gotti, but I would love to hear his conversations just about shit, like in his house. Like,
yeah,
I feel like he would have some fascinating things he would talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. He probably would. I think it'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall in Angelo Ruggiero's house because he doesn't stop talking the whole fucking time.
Well, luckily you can, you can do that. There's tons of tape on him. But yeah, he would be fascinating. You know, obviously you want to think about some of the guys that never fucking talked, like Gambino or someone like Neil De La Croce might be interesting. I mean, he obviously had been around for many years. And I mean, I really want to listen to anyone. I think they'd all be fascinating to talk about and listen to. All right. If you could pick anyone, past or present, who would you pick to be boss, underboss, concierge, and top three compos? Well, that's too winded of a question.
Yes.
I mean, that would take forever. How about we'll do this one? Someone asked, what's our Mount Rushmore for each? Boss, earner, hitman. Boss, it would be Vincent Gigante. Earner, Tony Salerno, which, again, we talk about how that 1-2 actually happened, that it was pretty incredible. As far as hitman, you know, the hitman's always a good one because, like, there are so many great killers, like Tara or DeMeo. I'll go with DeMeo. I mean, he was pretty, the problem with him is he was just so fucking ruthless. Like he just left bodies in the middle of the street. Yeah, I'll go with DeMeo. But I don't think you have a bad answer there. Mad Dog Sullivan was a big time killer. Someone like, Tommy Patera, Casso was a psychopath, lunatic. You're going to say Kuklinski, right, Blacker?
Yeah, right.
Which,
right?
By the way, I don't want to make jokes. He is not connected to the mob at all. What's your picks there, Blacker?
I mean, for boss, I go Tony Accardo. For the hitman, Tommy Patera is always my choice on that one. Tommy Patera is just one of those dudes who I feel like could kill you a dozen different ways with just his hands.
Yeah, we mentioned this guy last week on the show. I'll tell you a hitman that I think would be a very good selection, Joe Watts. And Joe Watts was, didn't necessarily look like a killer, but he was very respected and he got the job done multiple times. All right. Gangsters and Gunfighters. Very good commenter. Was Alan Glick informing on the Mafia in Vegas? Yes. I'm pretty sure that was proven. Yes. Alan Glick was a rat, 10,000%. And yeah, I mean, from what I understand, he was an informant for years. For anyone that doesn't know who Alan Glick is, you can look him up. He actually just died recently. Mm-hmm. He was obviously very involved with Vegas and as the kind of money man front man in Vegas. He was kind of that front guy, the clean name on the liquor board, as they say.
Yep.
And you know, if anyone ever looked into Vegas, he would kind of be the fall guy, if you will. He was very respected. He was the man of the year in Vegas at one point. Was clean, so they put him in charge of everything. And you know, if you've ever seen Casino, he was you know, obviously very close with Frank Rosenthal, who was played by De Niro. You know, made a ton of money, was very involved with the skim and that kind of thing. But yeah, look, ultimately Alan Glick was a rat, 10,000%, and put a lot of people away. So yeah, he died, I believe, last year.
August, yeah.
Yeah, August of last year. There you go. So, yes, he was 100% a rat. What mobster would have had a legendary career if it wasn't cut short due to premature death or jail? Salvi Testa. That'll always be my answer to that. I think Salvi would still be running Philadelphia today if not for Nicky Scarfo. I mean, you have to realize, I mean, Salvi Testa was born in 1956. I mean, he'd be in his mid-60s at this point. You know, and he was very well liked by pretty much everybody outside of Nicky for a few months. And Nicky killed him, you know, before he was the age of 30. I mean, this guy was a rising star. You know, when he died, he was the underboss of the Philadelphia crime family. He was very high up. And when Nicky went away, whenever that would have been, Salvi would have been the boss. It's that simple. He had the bloodlines. His father was very close with Angelo Bruno. His father was actually the boss at one point before he got blown up. So, yeah, I think Salvi was a huge, huge guy if he'd have stayed around. And I think he would have avoided a lot of nonsense that happened in Philadelphia because of it. Once Salvi was killed, the Philadelphia crime family was never the same. It's that simple. Nicky Scarfo went off the deep end, then John Stanfa, then Joey Merlino. And it was all just wars back and forth. And now the family today is a very big shell of what it once was. So, yeah, it would always be Salvi Testa. That it's that simple. He was a rising star. Would have been great. Another one, this guy was in jail so much that we weren't really able to see him. John Franzese, Sonny Franzese. I mean, he was very respected. He was very respected. And made a lot of money, but he was in jail. I mean, he had that bank robbery thing. So do you have anyone blackjack?
It's not a direct answer to the question, because I think, you know, the question is like talking about someone who was younger that we didn't get to see fulfill. I'm curious what happens to John Gotti if he doesn't get convicted. Like, let's just say we live in a world where the federal government's like, shit, this guy's kicked our teeth in a bunch of times now, we're just going to move on. Like,
yeah, would have set up a very interesting situation.
I think John Gotti eventually becomes president of the United States. I mean, like, yeah, we live in a world where Donald Trump did it. John Gotti was realistically a more successful Donald Trump.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. That's actually a really interesting question, actually. You know, because you're right. I mean, Gotti was loved. I mean, obviously, if you know anything about New York, I mean, he was very loved. But it also would have set up an interesting situation with the crime family, because as we said, there were unhappy people. And the thing about, and again, like, I'm not salty about this, because like, I'm not in the mafia or whatever, but like, I've always said, I think John Gotti is the most charming, you know, kind of just regal figure ever in the mob. I mean, you just got to look at the guy and you can see that. But from a boss standpoint, he was incredibly reckless. And I look at the family and I kind of say to myself, what could have been if not for Gotti? I mean, you have to realize how many good people there were in that family, as far as not good people in the sense of good, but good people as far as qualified. I mean, you know, I wonder if Jimmy Brown would have became boss instead of Gotti. I think the family would have went a whole different way. Now, they figured it out, and they're still pretty powerful. But sure. But yeah, Gotti, and that's what makes him so fascinating, ultimately. But, you know, the government was there, and that's actually going to set up our next question. And I'd be interested in hearing what you would think about this, because you were in the law profession. Paul White, where would the mafia be today if RICO never happened? And you have to ask yourself, I mean, I think they'd probably be as powerful as, you know, some of these drug cartels and stuff. But it has happened. And I think the FBI truly does stand for Forever Bother the Italians, because ultimately there's been no criminal organization or criminal group that has been more under the microscope than the mafia in this country. I mean, we don't go after drug gangs like they go after the mafia. You know, they don't go after other groups like they do the mafia. The FBI did very well in extinguishing the mob from this country for the most part. So it did work. Where do you think it'd be, Blackjack? Would it be as powerful as it was in the 50s or 60s?
It would be much more powerful than it is today. I think that with the advent of technology and things like that, it would be harder to insulate your bosses the way you did back then. But it would certainly not be as easy to bring these guys down as it's become. I mean, it's you know, a mere acquaintance with somebody ties you up in a RICO case nowadays. It's just kind of a joke of a law if you think about it.
Yeah, I actually wanted to quickly mention that I did a video on our YouTube channel, which we are on YouTube. Check it out. I do like shorter videos on smaller gangsters and stuff. I did a video today, Blackjack, on a guy, Tony Pep. He was a guy in Gotti's crew, and he ended up going down Atlanta and kind of creating territory down there. And, you know, he ultimately ended up going to jail in the early 2000s after an individual that was kicking up to the crew in a check scheme killed the stripper, and he was riled into that whole thing, and they basically went up to him, and he was kind of the capo, if you will, of the crew, and they kind of came down on him as well. Now, remember, this was a completely unrelated case. Now, he didn't get charged with murder, but he was still hemmed up in that case. If RICO wasn't around, he probably wouldn't have been hemmed up in that. And they're always grasping for straws with some of these cases. You're right, it is a bit of a joke law, but it's funny because the RICO Act had been around for like 10 years until they started using it. And then they decided, well, maybe we should use this. And it ended up working. Brian Anderson, have you ever met any mobsters? And if not, which ones would you like to have met? Well, look, I'll just say this. I have met mobsters. I'm not going to say who they are. I think I've talked to Blackjack about that. But, you know, I will say this, and this is something that I mean, and I mean 100%. Any of the people that I've met, they were always nice to me. I never had any issues with them. In fact, one of them was probably one of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. That's a true story. I'm not going to say I'm friends with these people, but you know, you live in certain areas, you meet people. Would I say that they're, you know, friends of mine? No, but they were all nice to me. As far as who would I have liked to have met? Look, I wouldn't say I'm a fanboy, but look, Blackjack, there's something about walking down Mulberry Street and you look down the street and John Gotti's getting out of a Buick or
that's the answer, right? Like, that's the answer.
I mean, that's like seeing the fucking president, you know?
Yeah, like, that's the answer.
And again, like, for all the people that are like, you fucking fanboy, it's like, well, I mean, it's
kind of. I'll own that. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like meeting Michael Jordan. Like, of course I'd like to meet John Gotti. You know, a Cardo would be fascinating. Gigante. I mean, could you imagine meeting Vincent Gigante? What would that be like? Could you imagine walking down Sullivan Street and you see Chin in the fucking bathrobe? That would be wild. What a wild time in New York it was. You have Gotti in Little Italy. You have fucking Chin Gigante walking around in a bathrobe. You got that lunatic Casso out in Brooklyn. You're blowing shit up. What a time to be alive that would have been. My God. Have you ever met any mobsters that you know of?
I mean, nobody like...
No big guy.
Import, you know? I mean, a guy who knows a guy kind of thing. You know, nothing.
Well, Blackjack, you would admit, and you do know, I I've met people. I've told you about that.
Yes.
But I think it's important to remember, ultimately, most of the people who are in the mob are not John Gotti. They're just regular people that have certain lines of work that they're in, right? And they might own a restaurant or a business. I mean, go up to Little Italy or go up to Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. I mean, a lot of those restaurants are mob owned. I mean, some of the owners like current mobsters. So, like, I mean, watch Portnoy. Watch his pizza reviews. He's been in videos. He did a video in Buffalo with the current fucking boss.
That's right. That's right.
Like Joe Todaro. He was literally on camera with Dave. Like, you know, and Dave didn't know who he was, but, you know, they're a little bit more out there than you think. Cody McCreary, if you could choose between Apalachin meeting or Paul Castellano hit to be at, what one would you choose and why? I mean, that'd be quite the story to say you were at the Paul Castellano hit. I mean, now I wouldn't want to be there just because of the 12 bullets that were flying around, but Apalachin was pretty fascinating as well. I'd have a worry about the police, so I would have said I'd rather be at the Castellano hit just because that has to be the biggest hit and the biggest event in mob history, surely. I mean, so yeah, I would say that for sure. I would love to have been a fly on the wall, if you will, in that. Blackjack, I guess sometime we'll have to do like a moments in the mob. I mean, can we think of a situation, anything like more influential than that Castellano hit? I mean, was there anything?
No, I mean, more influential, certainly not. I mean, no.
I mean, other than maybe the Kennedy hit, which, you know, we'll never truly know if the mob was behind it. But if they were, that would be number one. But I would definitely rather be at the Castellano hit. Apalachin could get testy because of the police, and I would have to run away from them. All right, two more. Out of all the hired hitmen throughout the families, who would you consider the most calculating and vicious? The most vicious mob hitmen. We've talked about this. I mean, obviously, people like the Roy DeMeo crew, Patera. Again, I always say DeMeo. I mean, they were very calculating. You know, Blackjack, I saw a wild news story about, I think it was about Gotti, but it was more of like a Gambino thing. And they actually went to the Gemini Lounge, which obviously now is a church, but this was like in the 90s, I think. And like they go out to the Gemini Lounge and there's this woman outside of like the apartment that they used to kill people in. And the reporter walks up to her randomly. She's like with a dog. And the guy goes, hey, let me ask you. He goes, do you know what this building is? She goes, oh, yeah, I think it used to be a bar or something. And she goes, yeah, it used to be the Gemini Lounge. She goes, yeah. She goes, I live in the apartment, like that apartment. And the guy just asked her, he's like, so what's it like living there? Like knowing that the shower you're in like has blood down in the pipes and stuff from people and that like people hung in the shower that you use. She's like, well, I don't know. It's kind of random. She goes, after like the first night, though, I got used to it. Like she's just talking about it. And it's just like, why do you live there? She's like, well, you know, the rent's cheap and I don't know. I like it.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would definitely say, I would definitely say the DeMayo crew. There's a guy many years ago, Pittsburgh Phil Strauss. He was a mob hitman for Murder, Inc. He was incredibly calculating. But yeah, I mean, I don't think you have a bad answer there. You know, there's a guy currently in the Gambino family that is a high up that's incredibly vicious. I mean, one of the most vicious people in the mob. I wouldn't want to fuck around with him. I think he's a complete psychopath. I'm not going to say who he is, but, you know, he's a high up. There's a lot of very powerful and violent people. Yeah. Do you have anyone, Blackjack, that you think of outside of that?
No, I mean, I think you hit all of it, right? I mean, it's hard to really go anywhere else other than that.
Last question. What mafia organized crime event would you have been most interested in witnessing or participating in?
Oh, boy.
Jesus Christ.
Again, I mean, we're answering a lot of these questions the same way, I feel like. But again, it's the Castellano hit.
Yeah.
I mean, put me in a Cossack hat and a trench coat. Like, yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, as far as participating, yeah, probably that. Or I'm trying to think of something else. I don't know. That's kind of a weird, macabre question, isn't it? It's like, I would have loved to have killed Willie Boy Johnson. Or like,
in my mind, that's the only answer, is like the Castellano thing.
Now, I would have loved to have killed Anthony Casso. Jimmy Heidel was the one that attempted to do that. Didn't work, and he ended up getting tortured. But, yeah, I don't know. As far as participating in, something would have been fascinating about being the – not that I'd ever want to be a cop, but I would have loved to have been the cop that walked up to the fucking fat fuck Lou Eppolito's house when the mob – when the mob cops got arrested, and like you walk across the street and arrest Caracappa as well.
That would, yeah, you're right.
It's like, you know, I don't want to be a cop, but that would have been fascinating to see. Great questions, I got to say. Very good questions. I do want to talk a little bit about mafia books. And I know kind of from my look at it, I don't know about Blackjack, but from my thought, I actually enjoy reading. I have a lot of books, and most of them are mob related. And people ask me all the time, you know, what's a good mob book? I do want to talk about, there are a couple of mob books that I would probably avoid. You know, one of which was about Anthony Casso, is written by a guy called Philip Carlo. That's a book that I would avoid. I would always avoid books that are written by the person themselves, right? So the gangster that decides to write a tell-all book. Look, I'm not going to say that Sell and Rab or DeStefano or someone like that knows more about someone's life than they do. But the truth about those guys are they are completely agenda free, right? So if Sell and Rab writes a book, it's not whether he likes the person or not. He's writing it from an non-agenda based situation. So that's something I would recommend when you're looking for books. As far as books that I think you have to have if you're a mob fan, look, Five Families, written by Selwyn Rabb. It's really the Bible of organized crime content, and I would highly advise having it. It's very long. I think it's like probably 500 pages, probably. But it's incredibly well written. It was written back in 2005. And he basically traces the mob really from the inception to your current day. And I'm wrong. It's 825 pages. So yeah. It's considerable, but it's really one of those things that you can always, you know, page through and find something or whatever. So that's a book you have to have. Another one, and I know over here it's a little different because people don't necessarily understand it or necessarily even care about it. But you know, I've told Blackjack about it. He still hasn't watched it, but I'd recommend he watch it. I would read the book first, Gomorrah. I think it's a fascinating tell-all book about a journalist who went into infiltrating the mob and reporting on what he saw as a crime reporter. And he wrote a book about it. And, you know, ended up having real-life consequences. He ended up having, to this day, he has police protection because in Italy, they'll kill journalists, they'll kill police, they'll kill anybody. But it's a fascinating look into his life covering the, you know, Camorra. It's fascinating stuff. I would definitely recommend getting that. Another book that I got recently, and it's actually very similar. Both books are similar, actually. One, it's called Wiretap. It's by a guy called James Good, and it's really just a bit of anthology about different wiretap conversations throughout history, from everybody from Tony Ducks to Tony Salerno to Gotti to all these different people. And it's just conversations between mobsters. The Gotti tapes is another great one by I think Ralph Blumenthal, I believe. It's just a bunch of conversations involving John Gotti. So if you want to get into the mind of him, Blackjack, are you a big reader? What's your story about reading?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that, you know, obviously the one you have to read is The Five Families. Like, that if you want a really solid knowledge base on the topic, that's the one you start with. I have read Sammy Gravano's book, Underboss. I would not advise you to read it unless you need some backup toilet paper. Yeah, I mean, I read that book years ago, and it was just as much trash then as it is now. So,
yeah, I also will say, and look, I know that, you know, I've always been a fan of his. I know he's not the biggest fan of me, as far as I know, but George Anastasia, I think he's a terrific author. Now, I will say, I thought Gotti's Rules was bullshit, and I'm sad that he wrote that book because I think he got used by John Alight, but. You know, he's written some really great books. Mob Files is terrific. The Last Gangster is awesome. You know, obviously, Blood and Honor, the Goodfellow tapes. I mean, all just terrific books that I would highly recommend reading. He also wrote an awesome book on Philly True Noir, which is a book about black organized crime in Philadelphia, Kabani Savage and Ace Capone and those guys. So, I would definitely recommend his books. I think George Anastasia is a really talented author for sure. You know, TJ English is great. Wrote a book called Havana Nocturne. It's about the mob in Cuba. That's really good. He wrote a great book on the Westies as well. There's a lot of great books out there. You know, obviously some of the stuff from Nick Pileggi and Puzo, the stuff like that, obviously the normal things. Let me ask you one final thing, Blackjack, on books. Have you read I Heard You Paint Houses or no?
No.
The book basically based on The Irishman?
Yeah, I have not.
Now, keep in mind, the individual that wrote that was an attorney. He was a prosecutor at one point, and he basically writes about his dealings with Frank Sheeran, and all of it is stuff that Frank Sheeran told him. But again, I highly would avoid staying away from firsthand conversations from mobsters themselves, because a lot of them really exaggerate what they were involved in and what they did. You obviously want something to back it up. And I will always say, people like Capisci, people like Selwyn Rabb, people like those guys, they're historians. They've went through, you know, factoids and court cases and all sorts of things. They're the most trustworthy in all this. So, mm-hmm. Last but not least, Mobstar. It's a great book about Gotti. I think Mustaine and Capisci wrote it. Very good. It's got John on the front and the mugshot. Very good book. Very well done. One of the first mob books I ever got was Mobstar. All right, let's get into Frank Cali. Let's talk about his unfortunate demise. And really, I think the growing sentiment is, and I wanted to do this show because I think what this hit proved, Blackjack, was the mob is dead for the most part. And this kind of illustrated that completely. So let's talk about it. Frank Cali on the sit down. Frank Cali was born March 26, 1965 in New York City. Now, Frank's parents were from Palermo in Sicily, and they were from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn. Frank grew up in Benson, and his dad was actually a guy that owned different businesses, including a video store. His father was known, though, to have mob ties. He was straight from Sicily and was very close with an individual, Domenico Adamida. He was very close with a Sicilian mobster, Gaetano Badalamenti. And they were very involved in the pizza connection. And that's something that Frank Cali throughout his life would be very connected to. He was not only connected with those guys, but Frank's family was connected to John Gambino. If that name sounds familiar, John Gambino was connected to Carla Gambino. The Gambinos obviously are a big name in the history of the mob. And if you know anything about the Cherry Hill Gambinos, Blackjack, we talked about them a little bit. They actually set up a business down in South Jersey. It was three brothers, John, Joe, and Rosario. They went down to South Jersey, Cherry Hill, and started selling heroin out of South Jersey. And Angelo Bruno was under fire because he allowed them to do it. And they were making tons of money. And then he wouldn't allow his own people to sell drugs. So John Gambino was, and still is, a very powerful individual in the Gambino crime family. He was close with Frank Cali. They were nephew. I think it was his nephew by marriage, Frank Cali was. Yep. And Frank actually had a lot of connections to the Inzerillos. The Inzerillos were supplying heroin to John Gambino through Sicily. And the Inzerillos, if you know anything about them, they're kind of another offshoot organization. They are a clan in Sicily, the very powerful clan. And Frank Cali ended up marrying into the Inzerillos. His wife, Rosaria, she is an Inzerillo. So Frank Cali has always been very connected in the Sicilian mob. And you'll come to understand, Frank Cali was the point man between Sicily and America, for that matter. As a young man and teenager, Frank would actually hang out and start hanging out with Jackie Nose D'Amico. And Jackie Nose was a lieutenant, big time, a John Gotti guy. If you've ever seen Gotti in most news tapes, Jackie is always around. He had curly hair. Big nose. You've seen him, right, Blackjack? Yep. Jackie Nose? Yep. He was always in constant company of Gotti. Gotti, it was his errand boy, basically, Jackie was. Now, Jackie was a powerful guy, though, in Brooklyn. He had a crew in Benson, and Frank Cali came up kind of learning from Jackie Nose. Now, I wouldn't say Jackie Nose was the greatest person to learn from due to the fact that he wasn't the best earner and didn't really do anything particularly well, but it was a good person to know because he had such connections to Gotti. And eventually when D'Amico moves up in the family after the Gotti and Gotti Jr. eras, Frank Cali would actually take over his crew in Brooklyn after Jackie the Nose gets the bump up. Frank was very respected early in his life. And a lot of people talked about his ability to really quickly learn on the fly. We did a show on Barney Belomo, very similar to Frank Cali. They were both really good at recognizing that this is what it is. I'm going to move up slowly but surely, and I'm going to be respected. He was very connected to the old country, and people respected that. Plus, he had a lot of success with just creating business and creating respect, and he knew how to do it right. He did business correctly, Blackjack. And this is the kind of thing that the mob nowadays has really missed, and these are the guys that were keeping the mob afloat, frankly, people like Frank Cali.
Yeah, I mean, they were kind of it's a new breed almost, right? Like there's a lot less, you know, in your face kind of violence and stuff like that. It's more about how can we almost in a way legitimize this organization and make as much money as we can, as cleanly and quietly as we can. And as you said, guys like Belomo and guys like Cali were very, very good at that. They were able to kind of change with the times a little bit and still be successful in this organization, just in a different way than they had been in years past.
And keep in mind, I mean, Frank Cali was born in 1965. That means by 2005, he's what, 40 years old?
40.
In early 2006, the FBI would actually overhear Michael Mickey Boy Paradiso, who is currently around as well, tell an associate who needed to speak to either Jackie Nose or family concierge Jojo Carrazzo right away to get in touch with Cali. Quote, "It's Frank Cali that has to get in touch with the administration," Paradiso said. So this is how respected Frank Cali was. He was very involved, very connected, very about business, and he was respected very quick. Because again, he had a lot of ties. He was close with Gambino, John Gambino. He was close with the Inzerillos, who familial were very close. So also keep in mind, a Sicilian mafioso in 2005 was recorded on tape saying about Cali, quote, "He's a friend of ours in Italy, and he is, quote, everything over there," referring to Cali's clout in the United States. So he was quickly looked at as an earner and someone who shared the wealth and was just very respected. Keep in mind that Frank had many businesses too. He was involved with produce companies. He had all sorts of import export businesses. He was just very much an earner and very much a do right kind of guy. He was also very much involved with extortion. And in 2003, he would actually get jammed up eventually after he and a fellow captain, Lenny DiMaria, were extorting a trucking company involved in building a NASCAR speedway on Long Island, or sorry, on Staten Island. The problem that Callie would run into, that one of the people involved, Joe Valaro, was a confidential informant, and that would lead to an indictment in 2008, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But it's interesting because not only did the police in America know who Frank Callie was, but so did the Polizia di Stato in Sicily. They would regularly talk about that Frank would travel to New York and then back to Sicily to do business and update him on Sicilian affairs. So he had his own guy that would come over and they would kind of deal with each other. And a mobster, Gianni Nicci, would tell his boss at one point, he's our friend. And again, quote, he's everything over there. So he was kind of the point man over in America when it came to the Sicilians as well. Because once the Gotti infusion ended and Gotti Jr. went away, the Gambinos went more along the lines of just having a lot more Sicilian connections in the family. They looked at it as kind of an old school thing, and Frank Callie was pretty known for that. Around 2009, John Gambino was elevated to the ruling body of the Gambino crime family, and the feds started kind of leaning on Callie, saying that he needs to stay away from Gambino, all this weird shit. Because again, at that point, Callie had just been arrested in a sweep involving the Valero thing and an operation called Operation Old Bridge, which was very much a drug a case. Him and D'Amico got arrested and all these different people. So the feds could kind of tell him what to do. And he was under probation, so he couldn't associate with John Gambino. But the feds were leaning on him hard. They couldn't really bring him to justice, though. He would be involved in Operation Old Bridge in 2008, but he really wouldn't do any time for anything. So you know, Frank Callie was adept at not getting caught up in anything. In 2012, not only would Jerry Capisci, but the feds would name that Frank Callie was now the underboss of the family. And, you know, after the Gotti reign as well, what the Gambinos did, quite like the Genoveses, was they were always trying to fool the feds on who the boss was. Yep. They kind of allowed Peter Gotti to be the mantle holder, even though he was in jail. But that kind of took away the heat from everybody else. And for a while, no one really knew who the boss of the Gambinos was. Was it Italian Dom Cefalu? Was it Lorenzo Menino? Was it John Gambino? Who was the boss? And at that point, Frank Callie was slowly becoming one of the most powerful people in the mob. This is rare, Blackjack, again, but a boy wonder Frank Callie was. And again, if we still have a mob around, it's because of people like him. He was so powerful. No one really knew the length of it.
That's true. I mean, you know, as you said, not only was he able to be successful and keep this thing going in the wake of really what had been a devastating time period for the American mafia, you know, in the 90s, but he was able to adapt it and change it a little bit. And like you just said too, you know, that him and guys like Bellomo became adept at hiding the actual organizational structure, because if you want to successfully prosecute people under the RICO law, you've got to show that organizational structure, right? Like, you have to show that managerial flow chart to a jury. And these guys made sure that that was going to be as hard to do as possible.
Yeah, so when you hear about Frank Callie and his unfortunate demise, like, people don't really get like how powerful Frank Callie was and how respected he was, not only here, but in Italy as well. So it's kind of crazy how it all ended up going down. By 2015, both the New York Daily News, the feds, everybody involved reported saying that Callie had taken over as boss of the family. And by 2018, it was reported also that he infused the family with, quote, zips, hoodlums from the old country, and bulked up its heroin and Oxycontin business. And again, there was a lot of confusion on who the boss was, but at the time of his death, Frank Callie was the capo di tutti capi, if you will, of the Gambino crime family. Let's talk about his death, because this is something that
bizarre.
Yeah, it really is. It is a totally bizarre hit. And it really makes you wonder about, I guess Frank just kind of assumed, you know, and it's important to understand where Frank Kelly lives. So Frank Kelly lived in Toad Hill in Staten Island, lived on a street called Hilltop Terrace. It's not far away from Paul Castellano's old home, the White House. It's probably, I mean, you would agree, probably one of the nicest areas in New York. I mean, outside of like, you know, some of the areas in Manhattan and stuff. I mean, it's, as far as the boroughs, that's the nicest place in the boroughs, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a really nice spot.
And, it, you know, it's $1-3 million houses. Frank Kelly lived in luxury. So let's kind of fast forward. March 13, 2019. I actually remember this because it was right before the NCAA tournament started in 2019. I always remember this. It was an unseasonably warm day. I remember this day well. I don't know why. I always remember the Frank Kelly day. Keep in mind, in 2019, Frank Kelly's 53 years old. At about 9:20 p.m. that night, Kelly's inside his home when he hears a loud bang outside. He goes outside really unknowing and sees through his window that his white Cadillac Escalade, someone had run into it. It looked like some kind of pickup truck, if you will. Now, look, if this is Carlo Gambino, he does not go outside. Okay, someone else goes out for him. Now, I guess Frank Kelly just assumed, you know, there's nothing wrong here. It's just some stupid kid. Maybe he's drunk or something. He had too much of grandpa's old cough medicine. I don't know. He goes outside where he comes into contact with an individual called Anthony Comello. Comello was just a young, dumb-looking kid. And at that point, he gets into a confrontation, if you will, with Kelly. Now, there have been varying reports on why this all happened. Some believe, I'm not one to believe this, but some believe Kelly had told Comello at one point, I guess he had a niece that Comello was interested in dating. Comello told him, I guess, about it, and Kelly told him to stay the fuck away from the niece. I don't know how true that is, but at one point they get into a confrontation, and at that point, Comello pulls out a 9mm handgun and shoots him 10 times in the face and torso. He then gets into his truck and bolts out of there. Several days later, on March 16, 2019, in Brick, New Jersey, Anthony Comello would be arrested by the New York Police Department and U.S. Marshals, and he would be arraigned on murder charges. Now, what's more bizarre is when this happened, I remember, weirdly enough, I was watching a feed of CBS2 that night in New York, and I heard some very random things. A mob war, you know, Bill de Blasio is talking about old habits dying hard. Dermot Shea, the police detectives, are talking about mob wars happening. I heard Gene Gotti's name mentioned. He had just got out of prison, which was incredibly lackluster reporting. I mean, leave it to the fucking media to bring up the Gottis. Anything they can do to bring the Gottis up. Do you remember when this happened, Blackjack?
I do, yeah. Because I remember all the stuff that you're describing with de Blasio making his dumbass comments and people thinking that this is going to be like, you know, some sort of a war is going to break out in the streets. And it just turns out to be some fucking nut job.
Yeah. Remember, I mean, they always brought up like he was the first boss to be killed. Now, again, I think putting Kelly on the same level of like Castellano is kind of, they're not boss per se. I mean, I think Frank Kelly was, you know, I guess street boss or acting boss or front boss, if you will. I think they all kind of ran the family. Paul Castellano was like literally the head of the entire mafia at the time. But this hadn't happened in New York in a long time, really since the 80s. So it was huge news. And as anyone knows, mob content is hot. I mean, people read it. They want to read it. And, you know, it was catchy headlines, if you will. But it was really the days after this that kind of prescribed this bizarre behavior. On April 3rd, the week or so after, and then to April and into April 3rd, Comello would be arraigned and be seen in court. And this is where things got super weird with Anthony Comello. On Comello's hands, there were all these different phrases connected to the QAnon conspiracy theory. And he had stuff like MAGA forever and big Qs on his hand. And I often wonder, was this a ruse by Carmelo to basically make it look like he was insane and all this stuff? And he would actually say at one point he believed Frank Cali was a member of the, quote, deep state, and that he was convinced he was enjoying the protection of President Donald Trump himself, and that Trump basically told him to go handcuff Cali and place him under citizen's arrest. Now, the thing that makes me wonder about the truthfulness of this, and I actually believe it is true, is because at one point, Carmelo was seen in Manhattan attempting to do the same thing to Bill de Blasio, which, if we've seen anything in history, there's just psychos, people like John Hinckley and Sirhan Sirhan and these people that just go on these wild crime sprees. You know, that remember the snipers, DC sniper people, those guys. Like, people just go nuts. And this is the real concern with this. Some of these conspiracy theories and some of this wild shit that goes on. Now, whether Frank Cali and this kid had a beef because of the niece, I don't think that's ever been proven. I'm not one to believe it. But I think what happened is this kid literally became obsessed with the deep state crap and QAnon conspiracy shit. And he, I guess, believed Cali was, a deep state member, and he went and killed him. Now, the defense attorney is seeking to prove that Carmelo is not guilty by reason of mental defect. And in 2019 of December, Carmelo refused to take a psychiatric exam and was warned by the judge that his refusal could jeopardize his insanity defense. The judge would also deny a motion to suppress his initial confession. And in June 2020, Carmelo was actually found mentally unfit to stand trial. Now, the truth is, Carmelo will never be dealt with because Carmelo's in some room somewhere in a padded seat. He'll never be in GP, and the mob will never get to them. Now, he knows he's a marked man. He will die very quickly in prison. It's that simple. So he's a high-value target. But you would agree, Blackjack, this is one of the weirder, bizarre mob things ever.
It's incredibly bizarre. I can't think of very much that's comparable in terms of bizarreness. This is so strange from what we all thought it was in the beginning to what it turned out to be. And then this guy with this QAnon bullshit, like, I don't know. The whole thing, Jeff, is very strange start to finish.
Yeah. And, you know, it really is, in a way, kind of bittersweet, if you will, because look, again, when we talk on the show, we're not talking in the sense that like Frank Cali's like a revered figure, but he was in a mob circles a bit of a prodigy. I mean, he was, and this is where, like, for the people that like want the mob to hang around and they're like fascinated by it, you know, losing people like Frank Cali is not good for the mob. Frank Cali was a special prodigy type of guy. So, like, you know, losing people like him isn't particularly ideal. I always will remember, though, them bringing up like Gene Gotti's name, and maybe Gene did it. It's like, why would Gene Gotti's like 80? Why would he kill Frank Cali? What sense would that make?
Yeah, right.
At one point, Carmelo would text a family member that he is, quote, marked, and that his family is marked, and that he is certainly marked for death. So he becomes now one of the most high value targets in the New York State prison system. Whether he ever is released into, I would actually probably hope that he probably doesn't want to be released. I'm sure he wants to just stay where he is because he's in some, you know, mental hospital somewhere, but really kind of fucked up. And it really, again, reports what the mob is now. In Carlo, you think Carlo Gambino would have went outside for something like this?
I don't think so.
And this kind of goes to the same adage of like, the mob is not feared anymore, at least in this kind of sense, because, you know, this stuff happens and like people like John A. Light walk around Little Italy. It's like in the 70s, would a rat walk around Little Italy for more than 5 minutes before he was whacked?
No. Like,
and what's turned into things is that like blacks, organized crime and black gangs and Puerto Ricans and those groups are now the ones killing people. And they're going out and saying, you know what? The Italians ain't going to do it, but we'll still do it. Look at that guy, Alpo. I mean, they killed him right in New York City, right in Harlem. Mob would never do that. Now they used to do it, but they're so hamstrung now they can't do anything. And now, you know, Now, Anthony Camillo has, I guess, balls in some sort of sense because he literally signed his own death wish. And, you know, I don't think we'll ever be gotten to, but, you know, Frank Cali was incredibly powerful. And, you know, I'm sure they're waiting around. The mob never forgets. So we'll see if Anthony Camillo ever gets out. I don't think he will. He'll be, again, in some room somewhere, but a wild and bizarre situation. Frank Cali, definitely a rising star in the mob, you know, kind of that Salvi Testa type where, you know, very respected and just, you know, he gets killed pretty quickly through something random. But Blackjack, real quick, have you ever dealt with any insanity pleas or anything?
It's very difficult, Jeff. Really, really difficult to establish. You know, it's not as simple as just acting a little crazy. Like, I mean, there's a lot you have to get through in order to establish not guilty by reason of insanity. Now, you know, that's not what's happened here. What's happened here is he's been declared not competent to stand trial. In theory, one can regain competence, but I don't know in what world that's going to happen here.
But would you consider like QAnon theories to be insanity? Like,
no, not legally. I mean, the
isn't insanity like, you know, schizophrenia or like something like that?
It's not even that. You can be diagnosed with a mental illness and still not be legally insane. I mean, it's just not the same standard. I mean, you have to essentially not know what you did was
a crime.
You know, was criminal conduct. It's a very difficult burden to prove for the defense, you know, so it's not something you encounter very often.
Yeah, I would have to think it would be, but yeah, nonetheless, a fascinating story, a fascinatingly, you know, sad ending, quite frankly. Look, Frank Cali had a wife, he had kids, that would have had to have been, regardless of who he was, that's incredibly graphic to think about. I mean, your husband goes out to the, you know, deal with some fender bender and, you know, you hear 10 shots. I mean, that's gotta be rough. Either way, a pretty fucked up situation in all circumstances, but that's the show for this week. As always, we thank you for the questions and really just the camaraderie. Thanks for listening. As always, make sure you give us a deserved rating and review. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at the Sit Down 7 and on YouTube. You can check out the Sit Down as well. We'll be back in the new year. We'll be back on, what would it be? A Wednesday, January 5th is when we'll be back. We'll do another great show. I'm thinking we'll do maybe Crazy Joe Gallo or somebody like that. I don't know. Yes. We'll have to figure it out. Maybe we'll let Blackjack Fletcher pick. What do you think about that?
Maybe.
What do you think about that, Blackjack?
I like that.
By the way, did you see the news story about how the government is like feverishly looking for El Chapo's sons? Did you hear about that?
I did not.
Yeah, well, supposedly they're like looking for him, and someone wrote a funny thing on Twitter. They're like, I guess it was like report that to this FBI if you see them or something, and someone just wrote, I don't want to die, I'm not doing that. Like, and it's like the thing about it, it's like, you know what, like I don't disagree with you on that. But okay, guys, have a great holiday. Have a great Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. Enjoy your holiday. Thanks for listening to the show, and have a great new year. We'll be back after the new year, and we will see you then. Blackjack, thanks as always, man. What a great show. What a great year of shows it's been. We'll see you back here in the new year.
That's right. We'll see everyone in 2022.
Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. Have a great night.